Welcome to class 3, 252 data mining and e-business. The title today is that we want to focus on attention discovery. I have a little bit of housekeeping to do, and I want to start by talking about the homework. The homework I'm signing today gives you the opportunity to look at Delist, which is a social bookmarking site. Who of you has by now used Delicious? It's still only about 30% of the class. So I will explain to you a little bit what it is about. And I would also try to understand what the relationship is between a recommender system for links, basically, between a recommender system for products, such as Amazon, people bought X, also bought Y, and a recommender system known as advertisements. There are deep underlying similarities, but there are also differences between showing you ads for brands, showing you ads for products, and showing you URLs. You will use Python, which is another programming language, and you will go to the Delicious website and try to discover. So we'll talk about discovery today. How does discovery differ from search? When you search for something, you know it must be there. Usually it's not surprising if you're looking for, you know, the departure of jet, price of a jet blue flight to New York. When you find the price on the web, you're probably not all that surprised. Discovery means typically that you're finding something which you actually weren't looking for. Well, you know, if you find something you're not looking for, but you weren't looking for it, that's one thing. So what we want to get after here is, how do you find things that serendipitously, they say, wow, I'm delighted that I found this, even if I wasn't looking for it. I want to ask you, what your reasons are. How do you discover things in life?
Recommendation by friends.
Okay. So recommendation by friends. Let's look at the process here. Your friend has some ways, probably outside the computer, his friends, how he finds something and he thinks it's worth talking to you about it. So it combines the online world, data which we leave online, with our social relationships. So a key element of discovery, I think, is that it brings your friends, and not necessarily friends, possibly other people who you don't even know, but the discovery is made available to you. Other suggestions how you discover things. Yeah?
RSS feeds to personalize the Google homepage.
Okay. I think probably not everybody knows what an RSS feed is. So you might quickly explain that.
I'll explain it correctly, but basically it brings content about a certain topic. So, well, that's an RSS feed streams data in.
So email used to be a great invention, and it's so easy to use. It has been used for many more things than actually this one vehicle of communication is good for. Email is perfect if you want to reach your TA for one-to-one communication, or if you want to reach a couple. But for things you write about the world, which, you know, some people interested in, you don't want to email those out as newsletter. For instance, JetBlue. I'm not sure whether you have a newsletter like some airlines do, or you allow people to actually subscribe and pull the stuff when they need it. So email tends to be push. S, on the other end, is that you say, well, these are things I'm interested in, and the expectation is a very different one in reading from email reading. In email, if I send you an email, I sort of expect you read it. Whether you acknowledge it or not is a different question. RSS, you often don't even know who the people are who are subscribing to your feeds. So RSS does not have the expectation that somebody is actually reading it. So when anybody comes to me and says, hey, you know, I put it in my blog, didn't you read it? I say, no, actually, you know, why do you think I would read it? So the difference between email and RSS is that email doesn't really have much of a discovery component to it, whereas RSS, and that's why it's a good example, has a strong discovery component to it. It also has a strong component that you should use social features to actually select or to have suggested to you which of the many possible entries, which some people have 200, 300 feeds, you actually might put it in discovery. And for the RSS world, we should distinguish actually between discovering a feed, say a blog somebody has, or the New York Times certain subcategory, versus discovering an individual article. There's feed discovery and there's article discovery. For the feed discovery, you can use your own past, because if you sort of be interested in certain feeds and that one falls in the same cluster, we might as well show it to you. The article level discovery, however, really social structures, by if other people discover that article last a few minutes before you, then probably when you're reading your feeds now, you might be into those as well. Okay, any other example? Besides you, and actually you might want to say your names because I don't know everyone. Your example about what your friend tells you and your example of the RSS reader. Any other examples how people discover something? Yes?
Reading a book where I don't know exactly what the subject, I know the subject in general, but not inside it.
Yeah. Newspaper even. The newspaper is, you know, a product which you buy for discovery value. And somebody, you had your hand up?
You explore and experiment and you follow trails. One thing leads to another and you...
In data mining, there is the trade-off between exploitation and exploration. Exploitation means something you know sort of works, you continue doing that, more in the search arena. Exploration is that you try new things. Maybe they're much worse, maybe they're more interesting.
My name's Ed. Search can often lead to discovery, like put in a keyword in Google and I'm looking for something, but because a lot of different things pop up and I start browsing it and clicks, it leads to things that I might not have even been searching for.
Yes, very much so. So I like to dichotomies because I think meaning is created by, you know, having dichotomies. But of course they are related. Once you are discovering, move more into search mode. But there are clear prototypical cases. If you go to Amazon.com, for instance, and you enter a digital camera, that's much more of a search than, you know, show me some things innovators are interested in or early adopters are interested in.
Well, like when I look for music,
yes.
The website I go to that shows the top 100 most downloaded songs. I'll look to the other and see if I like any.
Yeah. Any other comments? Yes, please.
I have a question on the website you were just about new standout companies, and we'll talk about it, and then we'll talk about your advantages and your standouts. So we shall look at these forms and check out this new standouts.
Right. Okay.
Another way you discover is by making mistakes. So you actually search for something, or you thought you did something right, but you
good. So in the third homework, we will talk about how we can use data and delicious to build a discovery system, in that case for URLs. And by the way, we have the homeworks clearly defined doing the third homework, and Rudy, who can't come today, is doing the fourth homework. So all the questions with the third homework go to him. Let me actually quickly talk about the next class. Next class, I will not be here because I'm running a conference in Germany, the Web 2.0 conference, but the class will have Bill Tanzer come. I just met with him last week and we prepared the class. Let me tell you what it's about. Bill is the general manager of Hitwise Research. Hitwise just got acquired last week by Experian, which is one of the three largest. Hitwise has millions, I think tens of millions, of users. Most of them don't know that Hitwise knows about them. So how does Hitwise acquire the data about these people? Any idea? Yeah?
Well,
Yes, right. So the canonical ways are either that you get people to download something, that was Comscore last time with the CarMax approach, where Comscore knew about earnings announcements before CarMax was ready to release it, and the approaches that you work with ISPs. So at the beginning of the class, Bill will explain to you what really the principles are, what exactly collecting, and what they would not give out as individual data. Because if your ISP would give out everything you're asking and doing, most of us probably would be unhappy about this on the web. Then he will talk about how he gets aggregated this data to the views the customers he guys have can see. I got an account for everybody in the class. I got everybody for 100 seats. So you'll have full access to the Hitwise data through the end of June, I think, and you can play with anything you're interested in. Then we decided to make a little challenge for the traditional industries. There's a so-called Consumer Confidence Index the Conference Board puts out. And that's created by randomly calling up 5,000 people. I mean, randomly means those people who actually are at home answering and have nothing better to do than answering questions to people who, you know, want to know, how do you feel about the economy? So we thought, that's one way, but maybe there are better ways. For instance, why ask 5,000 people if you already observe 10 million people? And you know the difference between revealed preferences and stated preferences. When they say something, it might not be what they really feel about it. I used to use the example when I taught a large undergraduate class that I asked sites. And asked people, so who of you is on a dating site? Of course, no hand went up. And I said, think about your very best friend. Your best friend on a dating site, and all the hands went up. So that's one of the examples that people might just think differently about what they should be saying, social desirability bias, versus what they actually really do. So the homework next week, homework four, is that in five categories we defined, you should think about creating a much better consumer confidence index than the conference board would ever be able to create with calling up 5,000 people. I want you to do this in groups of 2 to 4 people. Because, you know, we have some people in economics, other people in computer science, and it really is more of something where you create together. And all I want from you is, by the usual Sunday after the homework is, a proposal of what you would do. So you don't need to write very much, but what you write should be very crisp and what should be very clear. One question I want you to address explicitly is, how do you know it's doing actually any good job? So maybe talk about this for a moment. So I could just cook up any number. You know, the number of hits between midnight and 1 o'clock is a clear indication of confidence, isn't it? No, of course not. So how do we know that something is a good consumer confidence index? What do you think? Yeah?
What does consumer confidence usually predict?
So actually put the link into the website to the original one, but you can just search for it. The problem with such indicators is that basically what the website says, the confidence index is what the consumer confidence measures. So it's not always easy. You have to do some work on that. So here is from the conference board the definition. and it says, for example, etc. So I think, well, I don't want to tell you really what I think about it. I want to hear from you. One way is to say, let's try to get better to that construct the conference board tries to have. The conference board is smarter than you are. And the fact that this has been measured for, I think, dozens of years, doesn't mean that we can't do any better than that. And my tip is, by having much richer data, you can do much better. So I want to hear some other examples then. One lame thing would be to say, well, we see how well it correlates with what the conference board gives us. That wouldn't be right. What other measurements, what other metrics, what other evaluation metrics would you suggest?
Between people shopping, buying discretionary items.
Okay.
People buying a lot of, you know, more expensive trips than, you know, travel offices would have the year before.
Yeah, travel is one of the categories we defined. Yeah. But still, how do you know that the index you created is useful? Yes. A very good example. So it depends on what it is used for, what the actions are that follow. Blue buy more airplanes. What do other people think? Yeah.
Also, is somehow related to predicting stock market performance.
I expected that to come, right. So some way confidence intuitively should have something to do with the stock market. If we are confident, we expect stocks to go up on average, some index, if we're not, it should go down. These are very well measured basket. We could, for instance, say that we give a prize and Bill Tanzer actually is willing three prizes for that homework for people who actually do what they say what they will do in the proposal, and then wait till December or wait till and see how the proposals have done when they get implemented, and then decide on, you know, who was predicting best, for instance, the evaluation of NASDAQ stocks.
How do you determine the samples that you take are indicative of what you're trying to measure? How do you determine that samples aren't biased in any way?
Okay. That is a very good question. And the world has changed. We talked about when we invented design. We talked a little bit how in the 1920s, 1930s, when these great theoretical statisticians came up with confidence tests, how nowadays we live in a different world. I remember when I started Amazon, Amazon was data from ComScore for a six-digit amount a year. And I said, we don't need a sample of our customers because we actually have the data about our customers. So we don't need some fancy algorithms to say, well, no, given the biases we have, we do this weighting, and thus we think it has so and so many people coming every day. We just do a count on the web log. So I think for many things, it doesn't matter. It's a very dangerous statement to have a representative sample. For instance, we are creating, or you're creating, a homework for an index. So an index typically is normalized at 100, and then you see how it moves. So unless the populations are shifting over the time, which is a second order effect, the index which you're creating is probably relatively robust against not being a relative sample.
Isn't this already biased because you're assuming that people are using the internet, and that's the data you're gathering?
Yeah. A wonderful saying from a famous market research company that the data you're collecting is representative for the data you're collecting. That is a problem on the web. My belief is that the several orders of magnitude you have in having 10 million, 1,000 people, that's more than three orders of magnitude, that more than makes up for the bias you have by having people who are just web users who are answering web stuff. Nothing is perfect. That's why it's important evaluation criteria very clear up front. Okay, so that will be the next task. As I said, Rudy, today he's in charge of homework 4. Do you have any questions about what's going on with that proposal, which I'm expecting you to write by Isaac? Short. I mean, rule is typically one page. One crisply written page is better than 10 poorly written pages. As you know the saying, you know, it's hard to write a short letter. It's much easier to write a long letter. So we're looking for a proposal of the crisp idea. And I expect you really to come up with new ideas. But the plan is that if something is good, Bill is working actually with Harvard Business Review to have it published. And he thinks that if the students in the group really contributed well, then he's happy to make them co-authors. But that needs to be good quality of insights which you're producing. So to be clear, everybody in small groups needs to hand in a proposal Sunday in 2 weeks. Those of you who are about it can take that and make it a project, and then it's due at the end of the quarter. And those of you who have other things to do, do other things. Okay, that was just the quick foreshadowing of the next task. I have a couple of slides I wanted to bring you in into the first three. In the first class, we talked about cliques. Now, cliques have the advantage that we can only click on what's on the site. Then we talked about search. In search, we express attention. But what we search for still result independent. We might search for things, and we might actually not get anything in response. So it's still a little bit difficult attributed to, let's say, the URL to be in the web space, which we see in response. So the specificity increases as we do more activity, as we give more of our attention to things. So in class today, I want to focus on what does it mean to give attention. I want to start with something which is called tagging. A tag means you just put the label on something. And on the web, it means that you have some way to remember a website, a bookmark. Bookmarks are not that exciting. They've been around for decades. What's exciting is that you're willing to share those bookmarks. So to remember, that's for yourself. To share, well, that's the willingness for others. Yeah, maybe other people want to see what. And then the positive feedback loop can start. Namely, that you can discover. Discover things based on the attention others have left. So some people say tags are distilled or pure form attention because you boil down all your clicks into one, two, three simple words. Other people say, you are what you tag. Or they say, you are what you're tagged as, or you are tagged by. Here's an example. A guy called Lawrence, he has his username. Or maybe a girl, and she takes a screen name Lawrence, we don't know that. Decided that he or she wants to annotate, wants to tag that web page which has as housing maps, Craigslist, housing Google, with a tag called maps. So let's do this as an example here in class so you know what I'm talking about. If I bring up my page, this is the consumer conference press release. And here, the little bookmark, this label, it brings up, in my case, Delicious. And now I decide on tags, how do I, with my attention on this URL, how do I do it? John, any idea? Oh, it's just the consumer press release thing. So I could certainly say used in class. And as a tag, consumer confidence. Now, tags are individual. So if you want to use pairs of words, you need to tell it in some way. It's not about consumers and about confidence, about consumer confidence. All I did right now is I just created a tag for this website. And let me save it. So if I go back to my own Delicious account, it's just the bookmark that you have, and what is here? Here is exactly what I had added. Now, this one is actually not particularly popular at size, a website, it turns out, because nobody else has tagged it. Let me see whether we can generalize from the consumer conference index side here and see whether we can find something more general in our space. Doesn't look all that promising. Interesting. Maybe the Consumer Research Center. if we tag it, it should be faster than it is, but so interesting that that is really an offline world. Nobody cares for tagging. Who of you has a good site? Don't be shy. Okay. So let's go to JetBlue.com. Please ask, what's your name again?
Bonnie.
Bonnie.
Yeah.
Bonnie for discount. And airlines. And now, let's see how many thousands of people have tagged JetBlue. 100 people. Okay, now we can go into discovery mode. So I know it's always a little tedious, but I want you to sort of be on the ground and know what the product is actually doing, because you'll spend the homework coming up with discovery modes. Now we can say who are those people who have actually tagged JetBlue. And what are the tags people use? So it turns out here are the people, I am the most recent one. And here on the right, you have the tags they use. Airline, travel, graphics design, etc. Now, I'm always curious who considers tagging my. So you can actually enter your own page there. And it will now bring up the same page on Delicious, looking at who are the people who have tagged my page. For instance, Zuhao, turns out, has tagged my page just today. because at lunch we talked about what the next homework will be. And here probably, Kor Wai Chong, I know he set up a phone appointment with you. Is this you? Okay, great, so we'll talk tonight on the phone. So this is a posting history, and it turns out that more people have tagged Viking.com than JetBlue. So maybe you need to do the online strategy. discovery. What can discovery be here? You can discover what other things do the people who have tagged this page also tagged. And I don't want to embarrass anybody, but are you okay if I click on your... Yeah. Oh. Okay, you have one blog in addition to mine. So you are very new, 10 hours ago. So Ko Wai Chong just started 13 years old. If we go down here all the way, taking a random one here, you can discover. So this is that. Here you can discover, for instance, that somebody has tagged photos from somebody who I happen to know, Gregor Hochmuth, who graduated from Stanford last year. So you already get the idea about these connections people put on the web.
What happens when URLs change?
Bad news. And nobody will be responsible for that. So for instance, some people tag my page as www.viking.com. Just say viking.com. And they don't get merged. I don't know whether it's a principled way, but that's sort of the nature of the web, that if you want to change some URL, then all the luck to you, it will propagate through the DNS, the history of it. Very difficult. It's similar to what I mentioned in class last week, when Agoda changed decision reservations to Agoda, that they lost all of their page ranks because suddenly it was just a new website.
And is there anything with tags that are synonyms?
Okay. Great. So, yes. Any other question? I talked about how we use that for clustering and search.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't you think that, like, an example of JetBlue attack that because it's a company, right? You know that's the company and that's where they go to. Whereas Wagon.com is not as common as JetBlue, I think. But but if someone's interested in your website, then they would like to tag it.
Probably. It might also be that JetBlue has sub websites which people tag. I think it's a way for people to express their attention. And because the driver for tagging is, they want to be able to remember it themselves. My last name might be harder to remember than JetBlue. So yes, you might feel biased. But I think the point really is, it's distilled attention. It's when people want to remember something, they tell them. To your question, you are totally free to use any word. I know that there's a so-called party filter, but I have actually not checked it. But you can use any word. So now, how does intelligence happen here? We can see what words do other people use. If you introduce this too early into the game, so if right away it says, hey, this is how other people tag this page, then it might sort of contract people's creativity down to a fixed point. Because, oh, well, if everybody says airlines and travel, then why should I say something else? You might say, great, or something. If you leave it too late in the game, then people will just come up with individuals and you won't have actually some nice clustering. The belief here Joshua has, by the way, Joshua will be coming today. Joshua is still ambitious. He'll be coming to class around maybe 5:30 or so. He'll be out at 4:30 today and tell you a little bit about what his vision is and what he wants to do next with open software. So what Joshua's belief is when we work in Delicious together was that he doesn't want to do any stuff like that. So if somebody wants to have some random characters off messaging to their friends, finding paths for them to discover stuff and all the power. I fear that I still haven't been across what Delicious or what tagging is about. Let me ask you what is unclear right now. Yes?
I don't know why I would bookmark something that I can find so easily in Google. It's the first line in Google result.
Okay.
Why would I bookmark it?
What do people think? Why would you bookmark? Those of you who do Delicious. They're both of them. Good question.
Well, in this case, I think maybe to share with other people what you find interesting or delicious, and that sounds like.
Yeah.
Part of the fun is just to share with friends.
But. To share not only with friends, but to share with. So you are organizing the world of URLs in this case, but by the way, this is not used limited to URLs. You can tag colors, you find anything people want to tag in the world, people. So in this case, in simplest case, it was you might want to share your organization of the world by using a certain tag for certain things which are very different places in the universe Google has.
I was just
going to
say that it also based on what you remember the site being about. So all the important terms that you might need.
Yeah. And in many cases, Google, Yahoo, MSN might not have on the page what you're really interested in. Or a friend of yours might have told you about a page. So I think if you want to remember something, it is one way of saving it in a very easy, computer independent way.
Yeah, I can see that. That is, if it's in the first page, then I would mark it.
Okay.
Mark it. But if it is the first key, I wouldn't.
Delicious can be used to personalize their search experience. People can be clustered in terms of their interest. So, yeah, similar characteristics, people with similar characteristics of similar interests can be clustered. So, when I want to enter some search, if I get some results from my similar, if people with similar interests, it will, the result will be more relevant in terms of my.
Yes. So one important usage is that if you do personalized search, so if you're a ranking function in your past, you can reweigh the raw results just based on the keyword being present by data which Delicious has collected. A couple of more hands were up. Should we start in the back?
Yes. So I was just going to say, when you use Google, I think that you have a very clear end objective in mind. Whereas when you're browsing the web, sometimes you stumble upon something.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to tag it and record it in your bookmark it so that you can reference it in the future. Otherwise, once you see a piece of information, it's just going to be completely gone once you exit that search. And that's why, for example, Google has personalized search history. Because otherwise, you know, I mean, it happens to me quite often when I find something, I go, wow, it's really interesting. And then later I want to find the same thing again, I just can't find it anymore. I forget either the search keyword I use or the on. It's just lost content.
Yeah. Two more quick ones, or three more quick ones, and then we'll continue. Let me respond to that. The first point you made was that it shows you the popularity of your startup. I would be careful with this, because there your point about where it comes in, that no problem, if you want to have 1,000 people in your startup, I can send out email here and say, hey, please do me tag your startup. And suddenly there will be 1,000 kids, which make it much more popular, so to speak, than any other thing. So I don't think that's what it is. What it really is used for, it builds another topology on top of the web. The web, as we know it, is defined by URLs, by links between URLs, so both by nodes and by links. Those are determined by webmasters, essentially, by the people who own the page, who have right access to the page. What Delicious and other social bookmarking sites allow you is to put a different topology on top of the web. So if Edward Universe, or if just 100 people decide to use the same tag for your as for your page, there might not be any similar word on those pages. So in Google Metric, they might be as the moon and the sun. But because people use the same term, suddenly they shrink and they become very close to each other. So that is the way how I think we could say that that startup must be somewhat similar to that startup over there. People use the same term to describe it and describe something else. So that is an important element, which that it allows us to put URLs into a space, into a semantic space, which is not determined by people who are actually creating the websites, but it's determined by the hundreds of millions of users.
Structure or hierarchical organization, and that if I were to use it, even if I had used something that was of interest to me, I'd then store it in the traditional bookmarks and then the web browser, so that I'd have some kind of structure to go back on and not.
Delicious. So the power is, I think, that if you want to have a flat hierarchy, I mean, no hierarchy, you can just use it. But if you like hierarchy, you can do hierarchy. And it is. Here you see, for instance, for people, I have one folder, if you will, which is for people just to demo it here. And if you go all the way down, it allows you to choose how you want to things bundled or unbundled. So that exists. So you can, here, bundle is a term which Joshua uses for folders. If you like hierarchy, you can get hierarchy. One more, and then.
I was going to comment to the original question on the benefits of the delicious. I think one way is
So you can follow the attention stream of others by subscribing to their trajectories in this space that you've mapped. That's what you mean by it. Now the others have no way of not allowing you to stalk them. So in the design of the social structure behind Delicious, we had incredibly long discussions on whether we should allow for private bookmarks or whether we should not allow for private bookmarks. And there are pros and cons for both. We decided to not allow for private bookmarks. There's a Chinese tagging site called iGooi, G-O-O-I, and there the UI supports both private and public bookmarks. So if you want to put a nice guy and private what an idiot, it will only display that what a nice guy. These are important design features which decide on whether a site is going to make it as Delicious did or whether a site is going to fail. Just these subtle differences in the world we have can have incredible effects on the road. Okay, so how do we use this for design? There's still one element of discovery I'm lacking here. So there are three ways of using it for discovery. This one is we can discover a topic. I'm very Wittgensteinian. Ludwig Wittgenstein was an Austrian philosopher, I think 70s or so, in the belief that meaning equals use. So if Puritan utterance to mean something, then that's all there is to it. So if I go to a restaurant in China, I say Shui Jiao, and they bring me something, there's nothing beyond that. This is even more extreme on the web than it was before. If I want to know the spelling of a word, I don't look it up in the dictionary. I look up how many people spell it this way, how many people spell it that way, and a feeling of what's the right one. Right? So whatever the use of a word in the abstract Platonic sense is, you just simply look, here's a tag, and then you find out what do other people use or use that tag. So let's say here Web2.0. This shows me my own pages which I have with Web2.0, but it also shows me other stories from other people. So you can here, you can view all popular or recommendations. So what are the popular sites people tag with Web2.0? And here's a list. So I don't want to go through the content, but this is an example of how the millions of people use the service, not the authors, not a page rank which is computed on the static structure, but people through their attention make certain pages go up and make other pages not go up. So that's the discovery of pages, of the meaning of a word based on the tag. Do you want to try any tag up here in the popular pages? Any idea?
Stanford?
Starts with iTunes. So these are here tags about Stanford. And the canonical one is only like number 10. Interesting enough, the Stanford Prison Experiment is what Phil Zimbardo did in the 60s, which was very popular during the Iran War, is above the generic Stanford University page. So the editor who decides this is important, this is not important. It's whatever people decide they want to tag. The measure of interestingness which Flickr has for pictures has to be based also on the behavior of people. What do they comment on? What do they mark as interesting? What do they want to remember? And it is, if many people want to remember something, there must be something about it worth remembering. And so the important thing to try to go via some feature extraction of the picture or feature extraction of the words in the document, but simply go by what people want to remember. What do people pay attention to? It's very powerful. It takes a while to think. So that is a discovery where we follow a tag. The second one, discovery where we follow a specific user and discover what he or she is interested in.
Just one thing, I think this is a question for
sure.
The last slide, actually. So it seems like there's a slight bias that people who would use Delicious are into tech topics. For instance, like Steve Jobs, the text of when Steve Jobs spoke 2 years ago is more popular. 2 years, Brokaw, I think, spoke. And I think it's because Delicious users are people who are more into technology. So it's really a tension of a particular type of person. Right?
Yes. So let's talk for a moment about this deep element of self-selection you have on the web. So if you heard of push media, newspapers, whatever, then you have one version for everybody. If you're in the world of the web, of an incredible number of communities, basically everybody selects into those groups he or she is interested in. So the big problem that you push stuff to people they don't want to see is going away, just turn off those channels. 20, 30 years ago, in the golden age of television, you had the attention of whatever, 200 million people in America, by having a couple of channels. You can just, you know, broadcast to them. No more the case. So that self-selection is an important element that people, by already being at a certain topic, you self-select yourself into that topic. So if you yourself select yourself into basket weaving, I'm not sure whether it's a popular tag, a Delicious, despite the overall bias to tech people, I think you will find probably basket weaving community people there. The web is so popular now, I don't know what the percentage of you actually use the web, and it also depends on how you define use the web. That is no longer just the male young tech people, which has been reached by it. One of the key problems actually is how do you set up groups? It's not that you schmort stuff. What happens to information if a user leaves? Very hard issues. People in content management systems have started to think about it, but there's no commercial software that does it well. So, following a user, we have given as an example that we want to discover what. And then the last one is to discover people, to discover other users. How did we see that? We saw it by looking at a certain page and then looking at who are the users who actually have tagged that page. Your hand was up? Behind? In front? No. Yeah, used to, okay.
So a while back, the question of, you know, why do you want to tag something, if you can buy it at the top hit and the little page, I think people somehow are addressed it. The fact is, it may have nothing to do with what they're attempting to present to you on that page. Like, I think I saw right on the JetBlue site, people tagged it with things like, these guys have really nice layout, top toolbar, this is a good looking site. So if you were, say you're doing some research on, I've got a design, you know, front page for any site, you might go through lots of sites, and you're only interested in how good they look, what kind of potential in your website is. And that's not really what, you know, JetBlue guys are.
Yeah, that might be true, but I don't know if I'm to say, honestly, I don't know if I would use a tool like this. I think I would go on my own, rather seeing what other people see. I don't know what their interest is. I don't know if they share some interest with me, same point of view, or who knows what. I think I would waste more time by following this path than doing a traditional research. It might not apply for all topics, right? But
the wasting of the time is minimal. You hit one button, you write in a word, and it goes away. So I think it's an orthogonal way to navigate through the world. It's a way based on the attention others have made explicit by leaving keywords on sites. And in some cases might work better than doing straight search. In other cases might work worse. For discovery, I think personally it works better than search. Because there's more serendipity involved. There are the millions of people who are willing and not fearful of contributing their characterization of pages. And attention is simply absolutely missing in the standard way of information retrieval, which made it onto first generation search engines. Yeah?
Can you say to more the topic you touched on about in the beginning, you don't actually want to give people too much information with other people, you can tag something so you get some breadth of expression, but if you wait too long, potentially you get just massively fragmented set of tags, and it's really hard to hit them.
Right. So one of the discussions we had was, should we just, for instance, when I, there's some deep questions in the interface here for the interaction design. What should happen when somebody clicks on it? And in the information architecture, what should we show when we show a certain page here? So, for example, John added that what he wants to show is the person, in this case, Randy Zhang, who first posted a page and when they pulled it. That's not God-given. You could also have the most recent guy. But he wanted to help people get some credit for being the first one to discover it and to contribute it to the Delicious community. By the way, quick question here, which I meant to ask. On the web page for the course, to how decided, and if you're not okay, you should just simply tell us. When he discussed the homeworks, he actually mentions people by name who have done good things. So if any of you is not comfortable with, you know, saying people did and having your name there, then you should simply discreetly talk to Zuhal and he'll take the name off. So I personally actually have no preference either way. I think it's good to give credit to where credit belongs, but if somebody rather wants to say, you know, they don't have their name there, that's totally okay. So if you're not happy, then talk to Zuhal. What we found in the case of Delicious was people are more happy if they get credited as being the first one to have discovered something. That's why in this precious space here, in this very precious space, the first person discovered it and the date when they discovered it is shown. Then we have sort of as a measure how many people shifted, we have the number of people given, and that is one indication, but it has to be traded off. Recency. Versus, you know, frequency with what is more recent. Otherwise, you have a bias towards having old stuff there because people had 2-3 years to update something versus people only had 2-3 days to update something new. So that is another bias you want to sort of balance well, another thing balance well. And then here is the notion of related tags. That a little bit is that idea of showing a cluster of tags. So the tag I put in was predictions, because in two classes we're talking about prediction markets. And here related tag, that's how you show people. You know, you might also want to look at crowd, markets, wisdom, future knowledge, futurology, Chinese I can read, numeric management. It gets a little bit into the tail of those terms. I don't, it doesn't know it in prediction markets, but I just decided to end a prediction because I've written a book called Times of Prediction. I thought, you know, maybe I'm lucky. It would show up on the first page, but of course it.
But it's looking through Delicious or only your tags or related? Where is it looking?
This is not my tags. I'm for popular websites that have the word or their tag prediction in them. So I'm discovering what does the Delicious user find interesting enough to put their attention to it and call it prediction. And you can use this view on your own tags, but you can also say, hey, don't just show me my own or the popular one, but your own. Different setting, different views. Yeah?
Is there any ranking by people that you're tagged at with the sites that are getting? Like if you search for prediction, is there the ones that your friends take, those ones come up first, or is there any ranking that seems to your network?
I think Joshua will be talking about that. It's one of the product features we note, that there will be groups on Delicious. Right now, what you can have your, what's the word here, your network. I think you can say, what is my network interested in? So people you add. When you add people, another good question, should it be symmetrical? So if I add you,
Do you need to say, hey, it's okay that I'm dressing? Or should I be able, like in Twitter, to just follow somebody, whether they want you to follow them or not? So all these questions actually are subtle questions, which are very much worth paying attention to. Getting those questions right versus wrong has a tremendous effect on whether people are going to use the system or not. So in short, I showed you one example here, which is delicious, where instead of having a few people determine the meaning of things, the webmasters or, God forbid, experts in some field, who are saying, you know, this is a good camera and that's a bad camera, you move from there by turning this pyramid upside down and empowering millions, tens of millions of people to not really judge on stuff, but to just simply do stuff primarily for themselves and then experience the positive feedback loop of seeing, wow, that term. Suddenly a universe opens up of things which other people entering the same term believe are interesting for them. And it's a very strong, powerful feedback loop. And I just encourage you to try it out, to play with it a bit, and then you'll enjoy actually doing the homework. Two other examples would be Flickr. Flickr allows actually people discovery as opposed to just pseudonyms. And 43 Things, Josh Peterson did 2 weeks ago at Amazon, which is people tagging even their life goals, and they're talking about it, how far they are in what they want to reach. So, Singwood. It's also time, we have talked for an hour. Take our 5 minute break. After the break, I'm going to talk about, I want to get an exercise with you where we talk about RSS readers. So after the break, I'll first talk about recommender systems, because that is a major use for attention, that we recommend stuff to put us, what we said right now, for discovery. And then we do maybe 20 minutes or so where we figure out what are the data sources we would extract from an RSS, allowing us to actually build better recommender systems. So 5 minute break.
I'm Ron Gonzalez, I sent an email.
Good, yes.
Yeah, so,
let me just go to the bathroom. Okay. Oh,
yes, of course.
Okay.
I just want to tell you that I have to actually leave early today again. LeBron's the bathroom. And does it not show up?
I knew it. Yes. I didn't know that.
Thank you.
Yeah, have looked at them, yes.
Ah, okay. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.